One step into the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
Hello and welcome back to those of you who have been with us for the past hour, and welcome to those of you who are just joining us. I'm Dr. Robin Falca for Radio RMN here on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network with our guests today, Charles Osmond and Stephen Bassett. And for those of you who have not heard my shows before, I'm a doctor of Oriental medicine and a homeopathic physician. My website is healthfreedomrights.com. At the top of my site, there is a link and information about the current bill being proposed by Senator McCain, which must be defeated, and we need all of your support for that. Our guests are in the midst of a very lively conversation, and before we get back to them, the chat room is reminding me to ask you all to please go to talkstreamlive.com and vote at Raylan Allen for our show. And you can see the progress from all your voting. And okay, Charles, you were about to answer, and I would like you to give out your website if there's something beside historianofthefuture.com.
There's also historianofthefuture.org, which is the one I'm building right now, and it's a work in progress. I've been working on it around the clock, and it's taking some time, but I'm putting together some streaming video. I'm also actually going to put together a compressed version of the slide presentation I gave at the Consulate Expo, because I want people to see why I have these theories and what they're based on. And I'm going to actually put a whole bunch of my stuff up there. I mean, people have been sort of poking at me to publish and to print books. I'm not selling anything. I'm not selling any books or CDs, and that's, you know, my thing. But I'm actually quite willing to put them on my website and be able to download them and have their opinions. My whole focus is to say, look, I completely agree with Steve. We're at a crucial point. We need to look at these ideas, even if some of them are right or wrong or in between. It's the time now to debate and look at these things in a very clear and open way. So I'm just going to put everything up there for free. You can download it, and we'll just kind of go from there. That's what I'm working.
That is gracious, because I think the bottom line here for all of us, I know the three of us and for our audience, is information, because we are being manipulated by so many different factions.
That's exactly right.
And people need the information so they can process and make decisions based on information instead of how they're being manipulated.
Thank you. That's the whole point.
You're very welcome. Please continue.
Well, Stephen, let me offer one small example of why I have the opinions I do. Again, I'm not against Christians. I love the Christian philosophy. I really respect Jesus Christ. I studied the Christians for years. My only concern is the sort of fanatical fringe on the inside. But I'll give you an example which might shed some light on this. I've been to JPL a number of times for various reasons. Handful of years ago, I was good friends with a woman who runs a local business sort of development program. I won't explain on the air. It's not appropriate to give her name out. But this was before she was married. And then she married this fellow who is a very well-respected, well, certainly popular within the Bush administration, a extremely devout, you know, literal interpretation of the Bible sort of person. He's also a senior financial advisor, and I won't give out his name because it wouldn't be appropriate either, but he sits on the board of a variety of different banks and other sort of financial entities and, you know, kind of has his own policy ideas. So he was there at JPL along with his wife. I was sitting at a table with the director of JPL right across the table from me, along with about 20 other people. I was there as an invited guest discussing sort of the intersection of private venture money, bringing nanotechnology-related development to the space program so that we could expand on, you know, science and space and see if both the private and public, you know, could get involved with co-ventures that would have benefits for all society. You know, we're kind of on the same page as far as that goes. And my bent was in the material science and technology part of the picture. So there I was giving my presentation, and then we had this lunch afterwards. So in the midst of all this, I've been looking at pictures of fossils on Mars. It's pretty darn obvious. I mean, I don't know if you know about Sir Charles Schulz and the Xenotech Research website. I've talked to Sir Charles many times in person. he gave me personally a DVD crammed with millions of, lots and lots of face with information, including all these different photographs. It's pretty obvious. There was, I won't even go with monuments on Mars. I'll leave that as an open question, but I'll just go with fossils. There was life there. There were oceans there. There was certainly a range of life forms that were very similar to things that have developed here on Earth, at least at a certain point in time. It's kind of glaringly obvious. So here I'm talking to the director of JPL, sitting across the table, saying, by the way, I'm looking at these photographs that came from, your laboratory, with some enhancements and so forth. They look like fossils to me. I'm not a zoologist, but, what do you think? And before he could say anything, he was looking kind of carefully around the table, and people were looking kind of nervous, and I thought, oops, I may have done a faux pas. It was a private conversation, but I didn't know if anyone would care. But my friend's husband, well, like I said, is a senior financial advisor and absolutely represented the Bush administration's, sort of money train to the various support programs. He gets up and he pounds the table. This is a well-dressed, quiet, polite fellow, suit and tie. He gets up and yells, "You will not find life on Mars." He was adamant. And it was just bizarre. My jaw fell off. I was like, oops, what have I done? And I turned to my friend and said, look, I apologize. I didn't mean to make trouble. And she was kind of, she's good at social things. So she kind of immediately said, let's all go to lunch now. And, kind of tried to divert the subject. But it was pretty obvious that this guy was there to kind of dictate this sort of religious policy up to the point where he was telling them, you will not talk about this. You will not, because I am the money guy. It was weird. How do you explain that? I saw this myself. I was there.
There's 6 billion people on the planet, and every one of them has got to deal with this unfolding process.
Yeah.
Everyone has a different worldview slightly.
Yeah.
So you're going to get every manner of response. The truth embargo, which is the fundamental issue here, was established as a government policy for national security reasons.
I do understand that.
And it was maintained for those reasons, and still maintained.
Yeah.
Since 1947, formalized,
I think, 100% important.
1953.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it had nothing to do with religion.
Yeah.
It was a national security matter.
I agree.
And it was now in the... And in order to maintain the truth embargo, which is a very difficult thing, they employed a lot of different techniques.
Yes.
And some of that included disinformation, some intimidation, coercion, taking over organizations,
yes,
planning of stories, and using what was out there to facilitate their goal.
Yeah.
And I think to some degree they have drawn on the religious component. In other words, if they saw that a certain element of religion would be resistive of the idea of a galaxy filled with life, they would then maybe encourage that.
Right.
So you have this incredibly complex process, which I call the truth embargo, which we know something about, but there's much more to learn. And one day it will be fleshed out and written up extensively. But again, all of the components and the individuals, we're talking about a huge process. No individual, single component, even group of components will ultimately determine the outcome. The outcome is inevitable.
Yeah.
While one could worry, I suppose, I worry about us launching an attack on Iran. I worry about a terrorist attack in the United States or a bio attack somewhere. I worry about a number of things that could happen at any time. Yes.
But by the way,
those things could affect disclosure.
Yeah.
But the process underway in which our position and status in the galaxy and our awareness level and formal acknowledgement of the DT reality is so much bigger than these other things that the ultimate outcome is not, in my view, in doubt.
I agree to Steve. My only sense was that because and this was a guy from the Bush administration, and hopefully these guys are being sort of swept away and won't deal with it anymore, but that was the time. And I just, when I saw that kind of fanatic reaction, it just struck a chord. I said, my God, we haven't progressed that far, have we? But now here's my other question, and just throw it out there and see what happens. The first time this was tried at the National Press Office in Washington, D.C., and I was absolutely rooting for it, I went to see this whole thing happen. It was a week within the attack on the Trade Towers. Now, I don't know, it's just a weird coincidence, but it was kind of a strange mix of events. I mean, any thoughts about that?
Wait a minute, well, you repeat what you just said.
Wasn't your event, I don't think, but it was a disclosure
event. It was Stephen Greer's event.
That's, okay, I'm sorry. So it was Stephen Greer's event at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. It was within, I think, 6 or 7 days of the attack.
And it was
kind of strange.
Wait, what was the timeline, Steve?
Yeah, the disclosure project's press conference, the National Press Club.
Yeah.
On May the 9th, 2001, was a significant event, culmination of about 2 years of work.
Right.
Stephen Greer initially announced that project, I believe, in the fall of 1999. It was on a show that I had set up for, might have been the January show of 2000, but in any event, it was a show that I'd set up for Art Bell, and he talked about it and mentioned he was going to do something like that, and sure enough, in May 9th, he did that.
Yeah.
And by the way, the upcoming X conference, which will be held in the same room as that Disclosure Project press conference, will be held on the anniversary, the 9th anniversary of that event.
Ah,
which
good plan.
That's my intention. Yeah. That was a very significant event. $100,000 or more dollars was spent to go around the country to try to put as many of the government agency witnesses on camera with their basic story. It was kind of reminiscent of the Shoah Project that Spielberg put together as part of his movie The Schindler List. And so because these people are dying off, and also we want their testimony. So he did that.
Yeah.
They edited it down into about 4 hours, from about 100 and some hours, maybe 200 hours of tape. And then they brought the four-hour tape and 21 of the witnesses to the National Press Club to present basic stories and challenge the government to take some action. And they all said that they would testify under oath before Congress. A colleague of mine I put in touch with Greer is a very powerful independent press agent, or public relations person, rather, in Washington. And she did a pretty good job, and that room was filled with about 200 people, 100 public and about 100 press, including about 17 camera crews, because I counted them, including a lot of international crews. So it was a very significant event, and that night we got a call. My contact at ABC contacted me and said that Ted Koppel of Nightline, had asked for about six of the key witnesses that we felt would be the best to interview right away, and they would then start sort of the vetting process leading up to possibly having these people on the show.
Yeah.
There were other things going on, I'm pretty sure, with respect to other media.
Mm-hmm.
And so this event of May 9th, 2001, approximately 10 years after the end of the Cold War, which is about when I thought the truth embargo would end. Was significant and could have led to some very interesting developments, but 4 months later to the day, almost to the day, is when, of course, we had 9-1-1, and this event completely tabled the disclosure process and a lot of other things and set everything back, and it was a major blow to the disclosure process.
I have to ask you the question.
Greer was very upset about it. I was upset. In fact, in the months after the 9-1-1 events, I developed massive gastrointestinal distress. And as it was, I happened to have insurance. It's one of the only periods in my life.
Oh my God.
The last 35 years when I had health insurance.
Yeah.
I had signed up. And so I ended up going and getting a whole bunch of tests. And, you know, they were sticking tubes into everything and everything. And ultimately, they said, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just stressed out. And so eventually I recovered, and then I made the decision to press deeper into the political engagement of the issue, and that's when I ran for Congress in the 8th District in 2002. Greer made a decision to move in another direction and start focusing more on the energy technology aspect. Because I think he was angry with the government and just set up. And so that's what happened then 9 years ago. Since then, the press club has been involved over and over again with this issue, and more power to them. This is a private club, though it's a Washington institution.
Sure.
I have had six or seven press conferences there. James Fox and Leslie Kane held an important press conference there in the main ballroom November 12, 2007, with a dozen witnesses from around the world, mostly pilots and military.
Yeah.
Richard Hoagland had a major press conference in that ballroom in 1997, which I attended, and that's where I met Sarah McClendon.
Yeah.
And we had a second one after that.
Yeah. And but you had another one there. You had one about three or 4 years ago in the book, when the book came out. And then Tom Van Flandren held a press conference. It was a sad event in a way, but it was in that main ballroom.
Yeah.
And I am a member of the club. And I have moved the X conference permanently, if I can, to the National Press Club, and we'll hold it there every year on that anniversary date, as close as possible, of the 2001 event, which would be May 9.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be doing other things there. The reason is the press club is two blocks from the White House, 12 blocks from the Congress, four blocks from the Washington Mall, and pretty much about every major international and national news organization in the world has got an office within 15 blocks, and the 12 floors underneath the press club are filled with news organizations. And so,
I understand the press club. I understand that. But my point was, isn't that kind of an odd coincidence that 9/11 sort of overshadowed everything else? I mean, I'm just kind of curious. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I understood the point you were making, and it is intriguing.
I'm not unaware of coincidences, and I understand synchronicity. There are many forces in the world. There's a lot going on, and one should probably be circumspect about connecting the dots there.
Okay.
I don't think there's any connection between 9/11 and the Disclosure Project's effort or that event.
Okay, fair.
I think that there's plenty of reasons for the bad behavior going on in the world. I think there have been some things which have happened which have been connected to ET UFO issue, but I have a feeling that the things that have happened, we don't even know about. You know, there are some things that are really connected to it, but we don't know.
Yeah.
But in terms of the stuff...
Well, guys, we're at our break, in the sort of middle of the hour here, the middle of the first half hour, and we will be right back with Stephen Bassett and Charles Osmond. Stephen is making a point which Charles will be replying to on Dr. Robin Falkov. We welcome your input. I will be giving out the phone numbers after the bottom of the hour, so stay with us, people. This is Radio RMN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network, coming right back.
Close your eyes and look up in between your brows.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine, the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-1620. That's 1-800-873-1620.
Or gun clubbusters for weather modification. You can bring rain to arid climates and bring energetic balance to your local environment. Are you worried about roadblocks, economic collapse, and forced vaccinations? Orgon provides a blanket of energetic protection to your home and your persons. Orgon, the universal life force, the basic building block of all organic and inorganic matter on the material planet. Coined by Dr. Wilhelm Reich, Orgon has been called by great mystics and philosophers Kai, Prana, or simply the Force. Why have I not heard of Orgon? Money and power, plain and simple. In these coming times of uncertainty, Orgon will provide you with the energy to make rational decisions in the face of calamity. Fortunes are made at the flood, and we are headed for the strongest test this nation has faced. Do you have the latest spiritual technologies available to assist you in creating a world of peace and power for the common man? Go to OrgonProducts.org. That's O-R-G-O-N-E products.org. Or call now 307-200-4503.
One step into the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
Hello and welcome back to Radio RMN. I'm Dr. Robin Falkov, and we are coming to you on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. Our guests today are Charles Osman and Stephen Bassett. And continue, guys.
Well,
who is next?
I have a quick point. Please, namely that
go ahead,
the notable is that there's so many people now aware of the UFO-2 issue, and so many people engaging the subject that these kind of connections are being looked at all the time.
Hmm.
And between what is going on and a possible ET component. And this is true of a lot of things. Now, anything that happens out there, such as, for instance, the rather unusual event that occurred over Norway.
Oh, yes. I can comment on that, by the way. Yeah.
If anything happens, immediately, because of the Internet, yeah, this is going to be looked at, and it's going to be deconstructed and analyzed from every point of view. And if there's any TT component possible there, it'll be brought into play. This kind of popular scrutiny of the affairs of the world, simply prior to the Internet, very, very limited. Now it is ubiquitous.
Yeah.
So we are really in a new era.
I agree.
And that has the potential huge populist engagement. And it's going to be much more difficult, barring any dramatic containment of the Internet, for governmental structures and institutional structures to get away with shenanigans, particularly stuff that's out in the open. Now, it may drive them further underground, and that's a good thing. And so I always am interested in these theories, but the ability to scrutinize doesn't mean you're going to get it right.
Yeah.
But it certainly means that you're going to look at it, and that's the first step, and that's good.
Sure.
I'm happy to see.
And if I may add, I mean, going back to Bush's time, these are the remnants of an earlier era. They really didn't get the Internet. They didn't understand this at all. Your points are exactly right.
Yeah.
With the Obama administration, they're on top of this. They are absolutely the epitome of cyber awareness. They're completely on top of the sort of instantaneous aspect of global information, you know, sort of like in a real-time environment. So, I mean, that transition in itself may be one of the most powerful instruments of change that are available to us, and I, you know, certainly concur. But a couple more thoughts, and let me walk down this trail with you. I'm very familiar with you may recall, Dr. Von Braun, before he passed away, and then Carol Brittenek and people working with him, he talked about, actually, this sort of four levels, this four-step paradigm, where the final version would be using the threat of ET warfare as a justification for Star Wars. Now, I worked in a Star Wars lab under Reagan. I mean, I saw at the time what was, at that time, positioned to be a way to neutralize the incoming potential of more warheads from the Soviet Union. Believe it or not, 25 years later, I was in Philadelphia at a conference, part of something called the IPP, or Initiative for Proliferation Prevention, which is something I very strongly support, by the way. And the idea was to bring out former Soviet military scientists and connect them to Western investors so they could invest in peacetime applications for their technologies or for their development interests. In fact, I actually met the four principal designers of one of the MIRV systems we were targeting from the Mafia of the Rocket facility. I shook hands with them. I mean, I was there. I talked to these guys in person. It was astonishing. And we were trying to raise funds, and we did, actually. We actually worked with Lawrence Perkins Lab right here at Berkeley and got some other folks involved. They were developing a very interesting new kind of wind turbine, which I think could be a big breakthrough in wind power technology, and that's something we're working on now. But, I mean, I talked to the guys through an interpreter. These were the very guys that our big laser we were working at the time was supposed to shoot down dirt rockets. I mean, it was kind of interesting. I just, you know, got a little snapshot of that. But I have heard this said before, that the next thing would be to create a potential of a perceived war with ET, and that would be the justification for ramping up another Star Wars paradigm. And to me, this is a nightmare. This is the worst of all possible things that could ever happen. I just cringe at the thought of weaponizing space. This is the wrong way to be going. And yet, during the Bush years, there was that kind of, I wasn't no longer involved in the lab, of course, at that time, but there was this kind of undercurrent that said this is where they're going, and maybe they're going to use the ruse of, you know, China's space war and have that as the sort of interim, but they're going to use this kind of ET thing to kind of justify this next military development. Now, to me, that's the worst of all possible outcomes, but I don't know if you've been sort of hooking to that particular flavor of interest, but what's your thoughts about that?
Oh, I'm well aware of it. My thoughts on that are this. Carol Rosen's statements regarding Von Braun's comments are have been out there for some time.
Sure.
And it's not, I mean, I can perfectly understand why Von Braun would have said that. And what he was doing was projecting the old paradigm thinking.
Yeah.
That we have, since the flood, I mean, we've had about 8,000 years or so of a certain pattern of behavior and thinking and a certain worldview. That includes war is almost a standard operational procedure.
Yeah.
And so we have wars for every reason, you can imagine, war without end. And so this was a logical projection on his part that, okay, the next game that will be played will be a, quote, war with the extraterrestrials. However, you know, Ron Braun's been dead quite a while, and the fact is that a lot has changed since then, and what's going on is this transition is moving pretty quickly, and the old paradigm methodologies are eroding, and new worldviews are taking over, and so frankly, I don't think at this point that an effort to create, quote, the intergalactic war, interstellar war scenario has a chance to succeed.
Yeah.
I believe that we should be alerted to it. I think we should be on alert for it.
Yeah.
Just in case some numbskull has tried to play that card. But
yeah.
I just don't think it will work, and I think it would fail pretty quickly. And of course, there's another factor here. When it, you know, you can create a false war with the extraterrestrials if you want by some weird scheme, holograms or your own, you know, saucers painted up to look like whatever. Trouble is, there are extraterrestrials, and they may just have a say in this matter. So,
that's a good response. Okay, I'll go.
You know, it's like I'm glad that people think about it, but I wouldn't get too overworked about it. There's plenty of bad behavior going on we need to address and hopefully cut off its path.
Yeah.
But I don't envision a false flag scenario regarding extraterrestrials because I think the transitional process is simply too far along. And in fact, I'll go even further.
Please.
I am fundamentally optimistic about the post-disclosure world. I am aware that there's plenty of potential dark aspects, and I know there's still going to be bad things happening in the post-disclosure world, but ultimately, I have a very strong optimism about it once we get through the disclosure event. And I envision possibly a warless planet.
I hope you're right, Steve. I'm not too optimistic, but I hope you're right.
Before the end of the century.
We will have to continue when we come back, and I think that's a wonderful note to leave us all on, the optimism of a planet without war. Gosh, we big change for that, and it's all possible.
Yep.
So stay with us, everybody. You're listening to Radio RNN here on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. I'm Dr. Robin Falco with our guests Charles Osman and Stephen Bassett.
Above the dark despair shines a light we can share.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine, the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-1620. That's 1-800-873-1620.
Oregon Cloudbusters for weather modification. You can bring rain to arid climates and bring energetic balance to your local environment. Are you worried about roadblocks, economic collapse, and forced vaccinations? Oregon provides a blanket of energetic protection to your home and your persons. Oregon, the universal life force, the basic building block of all organic and inorganic matter on the material planet. Coined by Dr. Wilhelm Reich, Oregon has been called by great mystics and philosophers, Kai, Prana, or simply the Force. Why have I not heard of Oregon? Money and power, plain and simple. In these coming times of uncertainty, Oregon will provide you with the energy to make rational decisions in the face of calamity. Fortunes are made at the flood, and we are headed for the strongest test this nation has faced. Do you have the latest spiritual technologies available to assist you in creating a world of peace and power for the common man? Go to OregonProducts.org. That's O-R-G-O-N-E products.org. Or call now, 307-200-4503.
Hi, Dad.
Oh, son.
What's going on?
Well, just got my shipment of freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy. I was laying away our family supplies here.
Dad, you're not planning to have an emergency, are you?
You don't plan to have them. They happen on their own. You plan a response.
Like what? What could go wrong?
Well, imagine you go to the grocery store and it's empty.
Dad, that's paranoid.
That's possible.
It's paranoid.
It's not paranoid to prepare. It's perfectly prudent.
Okay, Pops, I get your point.
Keep it.
But, Dad, what if we never need it? Won't it go bad?
Oh, no, son. You'll have babies of your own, and this stuff will still be as good as it is today. And it's good, too. Believe me, I've had some.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dad, maybe we could have a practice emergency.
Test the food out, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we don't have a real emergency, son. But if we do, I intend to survive, and I intend for you to survive, too.
Thanks, Dad.
I better get the rest of this put away.
Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguide.com.
What if there was a technology that could assist you in breaking a lifetime of bad habits? Condense 10 years of spiritual growth into a few months rather than years. Would you do it? Would you feel like you are cheating? Change does not have to be difficult. The bioresonance technology is 20 years in the making, a culmination of Bill Kirkland's spiritual quest. Bill has created an electronic aid for mankind to make the next great leap to full consciousness. How? The bioresonance machine removes spirit of negativity based on the United Field theories of Burkhard Helm. Metron Calculus opens up access to the fifth and sixth dimension for health and personal power. Break through those glass ceilings and become a man of the ages with unlimited energy and spiritual power. Go to AscensionEnergyProgram.com to find out more information or to sign up for your $35 trial month. Go to AscensionEnergyProgram.com right now or call 307-200-4503.
One step into the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
Hello and welcome back to Radio RMN. You are listening to us on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. I'm Dr. Robin Falkov with our guests Charles Osmond and Stephen Bassett. And Stephen left us with a thought about a world without wars after we have this closure. And I certainly can agree that once lies and cover-ups are removed, we have a better chance because then they have less to manipulate us with. I'd like to remind all of you, as I keep getting prompted in the chat room, Guys, vote at TalkStreamLive.com for Raylan Allen. Let's surprise Ray with some really great numbers here. And speaking of numbers, those of you who would like to call in, I think these guys are going to need probably the rest of this hour, but mark down the numbers, 208-935-0094. That's 208-935-0094. And for those of you who need our 800 number, that is 800-747-1968, 800-747-1968. And before I let the guys get back to it, from monitoring chat rooms and chats in all different places and checking email, I got a very interesting quote that was sent to me that I identify with quite strongly, and I'd like to share it all with you. So this is a quote from Steve Jobs, and we will later deal with the other Bill Gates insanity with the vaccination funding. But this is a good one from Steve Jobs. And he says, here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them, but the only thing you can't do is ignore them because they change things. They push the human race forward, and while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius because the ones who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who do.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, Copernicus, was ahead of his time, but I got it completely.
I just thought that was wonderful to share because we are all working hard to change the world. If you could finish what you were saying, Steve.
The famous quote, and Steve's an amazing guy. It's funny, but there is this tug of war that goes on and has for certainly all of civilization, 8,000 years. And that is the vast majority of people who want to lead a fundamental life, a basic life, without much change. They're trying to achieve a certain level of comfortability, and they want to keep that. And you have people that are never satisfied with the way things are. And this tug of war has been going on. And I think it's a natural manifestation of the nature of life and also the way that different sentient beings are constructed. So I don't think there's anything unusual about it. Sometimes it can be rather nasty, but I think it certainly makes the world more interesting, but we need to manage it better. I've been asked many times, what do you mean by a planet without war? And it's really not hard to explain. We're at a place right now where we could say that a war in Europe, with the possible exception of a section of Eastern Europe, would be ridiculous. So if you said, Spain will be going to war with Portugal within the next 12 months, people would think you're out of your mind. And if you said, look, California is going to go to war with Arizona, of course not.
Well, that actually has that
thing. Just kidding. You can say this about a great, now significant portion of the planet. And so a world without war would be a situation sometime in the 20th century when, 21st century when, the idea of any nation going to war with another would simply be absurd.
Well, wait a second now.
How we get there, though, is a different matter. Yes.
A couple of quick thoughts. And believe me, I want to buy into the idea. There's nobody who wants peace more than me because I've stood on the very soil where nuclear weapons develop. I've seen what the next generation of war would look like. I was trained in this area. Believe me, there's nothing more I could possibly imagine than a war without war. I'm with you on that one. However, a couple of thoughts to throw out there. Look, let's look at Iran for a second. I have a lot of Persian friends. They're great people. They love life. They love being free. They despise the mullahs. I mean, more than you can possibly imagine. I live right near the town of Fremont. We have 30,000 Afghani expats who escaped from the Soviet Union, was doing their thing there. These people are, again, they're joyous people. They're good folks. They're very smart. They despise the Taliban. To them, it's a nightmare. Over and over again, though, where you have these pockets of isolation and sort of fanatical dogma, you have a sharp dividing line. You have a world where the younger folks, the ones who get access to the world of information, They get it. They want to be part of the world. Then you have the other side that says, no, no, this is all terrible. You must retreat back to the ancient ways because that's the only ways where the light and the truth are, you know, et cetera, da, da, da. Okay, fine. Now, I'll give you an example of this. There's something called the Reuters Digital Vision Project, something that comes out of Stanford, even though I'm Berkeley alumni. I spent a lot of time at Stanford. It's a long story. But anyway, the point is, their whole mission is to fund digital telecommunication and sort of internet access and this kind of thing to remote parts of the world as their answer to alleviating the potential for war born out of fanatical beliefs, which are usually spawned in areas that are isolated, where there's no education, and where you have this sort of very strongly enforced mindset where you must read this book and obey it, otherwise, you know, horrible things will happen. And everywhere that they've had a chance to insert the access to information freedom, it's like a light shining into the darkness and the rats scurry away. However, the people who still cling to these fanatical systems as their own mechanism for control, they've become rather aware of this. So now they're fighting back, and they're using their own sort of countermeasures to prevent things like digital, you know, vision projects from, you know, sprouting up in various places. This is a kind of a weird but ongoing battle of sorts. And the wars of the future are not going to be so much fought with tanks and ships and bullets, but they are going to be fought with sort of like this cyber level of how to influence people and change their perception. China's a good experiment. I mean, this is the fastest growing industrialization and militarization of a large, you know, Earth population that's ever happened in history. I mean, nothing that we've ever done even compares in terms of the rate of change. And right now, they're experimenting with this whole idea. How are they going to prevent people from seeing the outside world? How are they going to sort of keep their own status quo? What kind of dogma can they use to convince their people to see things a certain way? It's a bubbling hotbed of controversy, and yet we're seeing this sort of experiment happening as we speak. From my perspective, if E.T. was watching all this, and I'm sure they are, and things get out of hand, at some point they would have to decide either to let us, I don't know, self-destruct or quarantine us or sort of do something else. What would be your sense of that, if I may ask?
It's one of the very common exopolitical questions that comes up about the degree of ET intervention in human affairs. If anybody's opinion is as good as another's, mine it has been consistent in this regard. I divide the world up into, I divide history now up into two parts, the post-disclosure world and pre-disclosure world.
Yeah.
And what happens in pre-disclosure is operating under a different set of circumstances of post-disclosure, and we're still in that world, and there's a lot that could go wrong, and I'm aware of that. There is a theory that if we were to suddenly launch a nuclear war, since we're still in that old paradigm mode...
Or a biological war. A biological war is actually not, I think.
But let's use the nuclear war because it's simpler.
All right, sure.
And these missiles are on their way. The ETs would simply come in and turn them off because they wouldn't want that. I'm not so sure about that. Mm-hmm. My hunch, if I had to put my money down on that one, is that if we launch a nuclear war, which means that we didn't successfully get through this transition period, that they would simply allow it to go on. That our having a nuclear war right now, in the larger scheme of things, may not be that big a deal, and so we would set ourselves back 200-300-400 years. We would create one hell of a mess, and they would simply move on to another part of the galaxy, take care of other business with a little message saying, look, you know, you guys have screwed up here, and you really made a mess. We'll be back in a few hundred years, and we'll give this another shot. So, we know that they have turned off our missiles. We know that they've played some games with us. That the research on that by Hastings is very strong. We've had
several. I know the research well. I'm quite aware of that,
But turning off a missile...
Well, why don't you guys let our audience know?
Okay. Steve can elaborate, but I mean, on our side, yes, we had UFOs that were sighted over silos. Everything turned off. All the instruments turned off. Electronics turned off. We almost went to DEFCON 4. I mean, it was kind of amazing. Soviet Union had the exact same thing happen. Their own guys on their side were saying, hey, wait a minute, is this some kind of new U.S. weapon? What's going on? It was a tense moment, but in both cases, everything shut down, and the missiles were kind of neutralized for a little bit, just to kind of show that could be done.
But this gets us to a very significant point, one of the most important points in the disclosure process. again, shutting down a missile in situ in a silo to send a point is one thing. Turning off missiles that have been launched between nations is another. I'm not so sure they would do that. And so what that means is this, that our ability to I think, bridge out of the situation we're in, is to me, disclosure is critical to that, and that we've got to get through that moment and get on the other side. Because once disclosure is done, once the acknowledgement of the ET presence has been made, it can never be undone. It's out there, and it will there, from that point forward, affect everything that we do. And I think that the worldview change necessary to get us to a world without a war, and also the technology that would possibly open up the door to a world without want, fundamental want, where there's an adequate amount of food, water, fertile soil, and so forth.
And so here's where the argument's going to get. Yeah, hold on.
Let the seeds of radical of radicalism. I mean, everybody talks about radical. You know, that fanatics can. Fanatic radicalism can create a war, but they don't talk enough about what creates fanatical radicalism. But in any event, that technology is sequestered behind that embargo. And so, in a pretty basic way, if we want a planet without war, we have got to get through the disclosure event. And that is not a certainty, because, again, something bad can happen tomorrow. Just like 9-1-1 derailed the disclosure process substantially in 2001.
I have an idea
for you. A war with Iran right now, possibly involving Israel, would probably do it too.
I have a plan.
Even worse thing.
If I may ask.
So it's kind of, and I'll just finish up with this, it's kind of like what a parent faces when they've got a 13-year-old kid on their hands.
Yeah, no, I understand.
The kid's smart enough and big enough to do a lot of damage, but yet doesn't know enough to avoid it. And most parents look at that 13-year-old and say, can I get this kid from 13 to 20 alive, right, and not in jail? And they know that they may not succeed, that the kid may not make it. And I think I view us in that role. We have got to get through this disclosure event, but it's not a certainty that we will, which, and I say this because there's a lot of people out there who take the view that, you know, it's going to happen anyway, and we don't need to worry about it, so we don't need to really push on the government. Let's don't send a fax to the White House press corps. Let's don't support the research. Let's don't support the activism, because it's all going to work out. Not necessarily.
Here's my disagreement.
But that was a great metaphor, Steve. I really like that.
Here's where I disagree, and I love the metaphor, because I had the exact same idea. We are like a small child sort of stumbling around. Now we're in our preteens, early teens, and, you know, I know that I've been through that process myself. But here's where we're going. It's not the government. It's the banking system. It's the economic forces that the governments are like a surface veneer. Here's like a showpiece for the camera. Is the banks of the world who have a very specific lock on how they see economic systems, and they're not ready to let go of that. And energy is right at the very heart of what makes those economic systems what they are. Access to strategic minerals, access to water, access to farmable land, but energy is at the top of the list. They're not about to let go of that. And Steve, I love your optimism, but I want to hear how you're going to respond to that.
What do you mean by they're not going to let go of that?
Because intellectual property is what makes the banks of the world do what they do. You have ownership of things that have patents and have, you know, certain fiduciary aspects connected to them. What you're suggesting would be something where that would not work, or at least have to be revised in a rather substantial way.
Wait a minute, are you saying that the banks would oppose disclosure for these reasons?
The financial entities who run the world banking cartels and consortia that manipulates the currencies of the planet, as they're known to be at this moment, their whole thing is wrapped around the price of oil, the access to uranium, whose minerals comes out of what mines and what nation states. That's the world they live in. I mean,
I'm going to disagree with you very strongly.
Please, okay. Go ahead.
You know, it's a big world, and thanks to, you know, radio, television, and the internet, we get bombarded with a whole bunch of information about it now.
Yeah.
And it's a little overwhelming. And you've got 200 and some nations with all of those governments. You've got major financial institutions. You've got multinational corporations, and countless NGOs and organizations. You have multiple power centers that are competing for
whatever
they want to compete for.
Sure.
And to try to understand that, just that, you know, just an average person, is just overwhelming. And so we naturally want to, we try to simplify it a lot. And we try to say, oh, it's one thing and it's this thing, and or there's a small group that actually controls everything. And gee, if the world was that simple, it might even be workable, but it's not. You have a vast array of competing power groups with somewhat different agendas. But with respect to the disclosure event, there is a huge amount of misinformation and misunderstanding out there, and I'm not surprised, because remember, the disclosure event is directly connected to the ET issue, and the ET issue has been under embargo, formal embargo, for 60 years. In the 60 years since 1947, with the exception of a couple of courses, just a couple of courses in a limited arena, the entire academic community in the United States, which is composed of 5,000 colleges and universities, has never caught a structured program on the extraterrestrial issue. It has been completely embargoed from the university system. Yeah. It has been embargoed from the philanthropic world. It has been miscovered by the media until just the last 7 or 8 years. It's not been addressed by the government. So we have this enormous truth vacuum, which has completely made it very difficult to try to truly understand what's going on. And so you have all these myths and misconceptions. Yeah. First of all, there's no question that we developed a vested interest around fossil fuel energy. There's also no question that a great deal of what we have today is because we had fossil fuels. If it wasn't possible to convert oil into gasoline and create electricity, I can assure you it would be a much different world today and probably not as good a world. However, we have pressed that paradigm almost to the limit in terms of cost, in terms of environmental impact, and we have now reached a dramatic, well, I guess you could call cost-benefit ratio, where it's turned against that paradigm, and the people in the industry know that. That's why they have filled their pockets with huge amounts of money.
Yes, they have.
Richer than God. They have refused to build nuclear plants or refineries, because those would be white elephants in the post-disclosure world. You don't build billions of dollars of construction of something that will be useless in 10 or 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And now they are probably already and have been in the positioning process, where they will then move aggressively into the post-disclosure world. Now, what does that mean? It means that once the ET technology is in place, and we can drop the price of energy, switch out of fossil fuel,
should be free.
Then what we will do is generate a vast business explosion with all kinds of possibilities for accumulating wealth. And the banking industry and the oil money people will shift their monies into these new business developments, and in the post-disclosure world, they will be richer than ever.
Well, wait a second. Now.
Okay, and guys, if you could let me just interject one point now about banking, because Catherine Austin Fitz was recently on COSA. It might have been last night or the night before, and I know her latest figures are that